Welcome back to, I think, episode 285. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. And I wanted to congratulate you on your interview with Gemma O'Doherty. That was just sensational. I mean, of all of the people in the independent media, I think I admire her the most. She's so clear-minded and courageous. Anyone who hasn't heard the interview really should go to Tim's site and download it and listen to her. She's just absolutely extraordinary. She's the individual who created the Irish Light, the newspaper, which brings out the truth in terms of what's going on in Ireland. And I have in the past, I'm sure you recall, Tim, I've mentioned how much I, you know, admire that approach, you know, that she's created a newspaper. She's in control of it. She doesn't have to beg anyone to have a story, you know, put into circulation. And so this is the way that we need to fight back, because we just have to completely control, you know, the media. And since the internet is so vulnerable, the idea of having small newspapers like this is just a great idea. Anyway, just congratulations on that interview. That was just sensational. And I hope you have more of them with her.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. That's actually an actual newspaper made out of paper, and they distribute it.
Yeah. One of those.
Yeah. One of those things. She's a great lady, doing a lot of good work over there in Ireland, the conquered nation of Ireland. They have, as bad as things are here, it's even worse there with their government. Because it's one unitary state, so it's easy to take over. And so they're trying to get it back, I suppose, from the globe.
Just have to fight with everything they have. I mean, they are literally genociding the people and destroying, flat out destroying the culture with the immigration policy and the financialization and debt creation that the oligarchs are. They've really focused on Ireland as the start of the really draconian, you know, kind of brave new world social activities. So anyway, let's support Gemma and everywhere we can, and let's help the Irish fight back.
Yes, I was just watching a videotape of protests in Ireland regarding the immigration issue. And it's interesting that most of the speakers and the activists that are protesting against this open border policy of Ireland, of the Irish government, are older people, middle-aged people. And looking at the protesters that are, you know, the counter-protesters who are calling for open borders, they're young people who simply don't know better. And this is a kind of a problem, because the Zoomers or millennials have been they've been deprived of a history, of a culture, and they're deracinated and they're ignorant of the past. They don't know much of what it was like in the past. So they don't have a basis from which to judge what's going on. And they're easily buffaloed or fooled by, you know, all the woke stuff and with Google and all that. And also I'm looking at the protests. These older men are well-dressed, you know, tweed jackets, overcoats, and the young kids just look like slobs. Even the girls look like slobs. You know, you wouldn't want anything to do with them. They're just ugly, and they make themselves ugly. They could be pretty. They make themselves ugly, and that's something that we've known, an aesthetic that you see in a lot of these things.
They've been destroyed by the pornography and by the mass media. Mm-hmm. Gemma made a really good point in that she would like to do away with the English language.
Yes.
And go back to Gaelic, because the English language, you know, and as a media road, is just completely polluted with pornography and with mind control. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the movies and the shows that are put out, you know, and by the TV networks. And so to just get out of that language system would be a really great step, you know, in the right direction. We have to be clever at this point, you know, because the genocide of our race and of our cultures is really quickening. I mean, Gemma outlined the absolute flood of immigrants from Africa and from the Middle East that are coming into Ireland, and how they're just throwing up these huge Soviet style apartment houses and you know, blocks, mm-hmm. And everywhere that they can to just accommodate more and more of these people. And obviously there's no economic or culturally coherent reason for this. It's just deliberate genocide of a culture and a people. That's all.
Yeah, if you're worried about population, why are you legalizing abortion and promoting degeneracy?
Yeah.
And destroying the family from which children would come. Large families would come. Clearly, that's Irish. It's Ireland. Ireland's make for good laboratories for these things, whether it's New Zealand or Ireland, you know. So, well, here, finally making the national news is this train wreck. I'm not talking about the Biden administration. Well, it's part of the Biden administration. An actual train wreck. From what I understand, they're like 1,200 a year or something in this country. But this one in East Palestine, Ohio, near the Pennsylvania border. And I quipped, why are the residents of East Palestine being treated like Palestinians? Well, this train wreck, apparently it derailed in the middle of the town, spilled a bunch of noxious, poisonous chemicals. I understand there, 20 miles, there's a fire on this train, which wasn't noticed or something. and then it derailed. Right. And then, of course, that was bad enough. But then they decided to blow up the chemical spill, which created a mushroom cloud and a deadly plume, if you will, a deadly cloud.
They lit it a fire.
Now, I'm no expert in cleanup, hazardous waste cleanup or hazardous, you know, material cleanup. So is that standard?
I asked.
You appear to make it worse, right? I mean, that's what
I asked my friend Dave Schmidt, the biologist, Notre Dame biologist, and I said, "Dave, is this like normal?" And he said he had been asked by people who were downwind who knew him what to do, and he said just evacuate immediately. You know,
yeah.
He said the potential for really damaging side effects from these chemicals is just a question mark. It's almost unique. There's just never been anything like this. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. I mean, all of the current sort of, you know, cultural fractures were visible in this, you know. First of all, there wasn't proper safety, sort of protocols. There had been political skirmishes about this for like 10 years. Both political parties blamed the other one for getting rid of regulations, but both parties, in fact, had been getting rid of regulations of train safety for the last 20 years. The train is to a large extent, is owned by BlackRock.
Yeah, it's Norfolk Southern, and it's owned by these hedge funds, BlackRock, yeah. Vanguard.
Vanguard, right. That's who owns it. And so they have a lot of political clout, and you can't really bring any kind of, you know, safety protocol.
Well, Joe, would this hurt BlackRock's ESG score rating?
I don't think so, because they own all the hazardous waste cleanup crews, you know. So they're okay, probably...
They're
going to make money on this one.
Yeah.
But so anyway,
just like Ukraine, right?
Yeah. I mean, the train was a mile long. The people in the front, the engineers, couldn't possibly see what was going on in back. The safety signals that are supposed to be registering to the conductor weren't working properly. You didn't have a caboose like in the old days because it's too expensive and BlackRock can't make enough money. So no one could see that the thing was just sparking and, you know, for 20 miles. And then, so the train derails, and now you have literally among the most hazardous chemicals on the planet sitting there leaking out. And what do they decide to do is to set it ablaze? I mean, you know, the first thing I thought was this is a deliberate sort of just, you know, component of genocide. This couldn't possibly be accidental. It is possible. And of course, what's interesting is you can't really see into the actual facts, right? The media just did an absolutely horrendous job of getting any information out about this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just almost like a news blackout.
Yeah, it occurred February 3rd.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the independent media, this thing wouldn't really have gotten to, you know.
Well, the Biden administration was too busy shooting $400,000 missiles at $12 balloons.
They shot it down. They got it.
So
don't complain. I mean,
that's literally what happened, right?
And we were lucky.
There were hobby balloons, right?
This shows why this shows exactly why we can't give the Ukrainian any more missiles, because we need everyone, because of these balloons.
You're right about it. So this incident, this wreck, is a metaphor for the country.
It's an absolute perfect metaphor.
Because you have a hedge funds that are seeking maximize short-term profits at the expense of public safety and ultimately efficiency, really. So this is a failure of vulture capitalism. You also have the issue of diversity, right? Because the Norfolk Southern celebrates diversity, inclusion and equity or something or other.
Well, the whole train runs on affirmative action. I mean, I don't know who the individuals were, but it was a breakdown at every level.
Yeah.
You can imagine, you know, there. At something like that, there has to be a whole bureaucracy above it. You can just imagine who these individuals are at this point in our nation's state. You know, they're probably
it was precision scheduling or something on the railroad.
Yeah, you just
cuts in into time, inspection and these things, right?
So. Right. Yeah, and so anyway, so it was just a obvious collapse on the safety protocol side. And then the government came in and immediately made it absolutely worse as soon as they showed up. And they turned. Now, lighting thing ablaze, very interesting, because the rationale, first of all, just to back up, obviously 100% of the toxicity will be put into the atmosphere if you put it ablaze, right?
Is it easy to contain if it's on the ground? As it's
yeah,
in the air?
The obvious, you know, process should be to try to contain it to whatever extent possible. But they said, well, at least this is what has gotten out, is that the claim is they were afraid it was going to explode. Well, what is worse, an explosion or just burning it all up? It still 100% still gets out.
Yeah.
So they weren't really making anything less likely to be polluting by setting it ablaze. That is the maximum 100% pollution of the entire load of the toxic chemicals. And then the thing went out, and then talk about a metaphor. I mean, have you seen the pictures of the black cloud?
Yeah.
I mean, it really did look like, you know, Satan himself was visiting the planet. It was just the most evil looking thing I've ever seen in my life. That cloud was so huge. It looked like a black kind of hurricane shot from above, you know, from satellite. It was just so evil looking. And then DeWine, the governor, I mean, at some point, you know, everyone was just panicking, and he came in and said, well, nothing to worry about. It's safe. You can go home. And it was only because there were like media people, little tiny independent media guys who are going around and showing all the dead animals. Mm-hmm. They were dropping like flies. And this one guy was going and showing that in the water, you could actually see a thin layer of a chemical pollutant on the top of the water. I mean, it was obviously not safe. So, you know, it's going to, as I understand the these chemicals, they're just highly carcinogenic.
And vinyl chloride, I think, is the worst. Or
yeah, vinyl chloride. Well, it changes, and when you burn it, you get all kinds of side effects. I mean,
don't you get like phosgene gas or something, which is like World War I?
Anyways, some of the stuff, you get one little tiny atom or particle on you, it can, you know, be carcinogenic. You know, they're so tall. Anyway, you're going to see, you know, in a few years, it'll be like Chernobyl. You'll start to see the back end of this, and it'll just add to the you know, to the demise of the American public's health, the thing went over, the cloud went over an enormous area. I was actually worried about you when I started seeing the maps. You know, I was hoping that the wind didn't head south. I mean, it was just catastrophic. So anyway, the country is in bad shape. The government really is getting less and less competent at just the simple core activities that it needs to keep.
Well, because the Biden administration is obsessed on diversity, not competency. Yeah. He came out with an executive order, again, a more anti-white executive order promoting diversity. Our own Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg, was picked for that job simply because he was a homosexual. Nothing to do with transportation.
And it is.
And he's out there talking about the problem with infrastructure is that there are too many white male construction workers. It's like, right. Okay.
Yeah, what the problem is.
You want it done right? But the problem is, if you're going to hold out for these positions, like I said, if your standard is you have to be a sodomite degenerate, or you have to be a black woman, a person of color, or some other supposedly privileged, marginalized category that they've come up with, you're not going to have competent people doing these things, assuming the best of intentions. And this is something with these companies is they've made war on the core, country's demographic, which are whites, particularly white males, who provide the highest quality, most productive labor in the country. And so if you make war on that cohort, that group, you're going to have you're going to experience, because you simply don't have enough of your privilege classes, which are now the minorities, the persons of color, the so-called sexual minorities, degenerates, whatever. You don't have enough of them to do the job, but even if they're intending to do the job right. And more often than not, they don't do the job right. They have no intention of doing the job right, or they have a separate agenda, like promoting degeneracy or some ideology rather than just getting the job done. And that's a good example with Pete Buttigieg, who's now talking about racist roads and stuff like that, as trains are derailing more than 1,000 a year. And,
right. How do you pronounce his last name? I always get it wrong.
Buttigieg. I think it's
Buttigieg.
Buttigieg or Buttigieg.
I can't. Anyway,
I would say butt Jeb. That's too
important. Right. I know. That's the thing is that my mind, I can't say it any other way. So I just don't say it. I'm sorry.
Some say butt plug. But
it just happens when I say it. But anyway, let's just call him Pete. I mean, I'm just going to ask you flat out, Tim. What do you think?
His father was a communist, by the way.
So. Yeah. What do you think Pete knows about maintaining safe railroads? What do you think his expertise in this area is? I mean, what do you think he knows about the safe transportation of hazardous materials? I'm just asking. I mean, I would bet he doesn't know anything. I mean, literally. I mean, you could ask him the simplest questions about these. I'm not even sure he's ever even.
Well, on that issue, infrastructure and transportation, he was known as Pothole Pete in South Bend because he couldn't even get the potholes repaired. But he did screw up trash service. I don't understand. They had, in South Bend, Michael Jones tells those stories. He was a neighbor of Pete's father and kind of didn't know, was aware of him growing up. In South Bend, they have these service alleys behind the homes, and the homes are up on a hill with a step in the stairs in the middle, that type of house where the house is set back up on a hill. And they, for longest time, people remember the trash service would go through the back alleys. You see this in some of the neighborhoods, and you put your trash in the back, not in front. And the trash trucks just go through the alleyways, and they don't slow traffic down much. It's very efficient. And they would employ three guys in South Bend, usually the blacks, black men. It was a source of high wages for black men. You could raise a family on it. It was city work, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was almost like postal service, that sort of thing. And so what happened is Pete came up with a bright idea of automating it. And basically with the arm, these automated trucks where the arm picks up the trash and dumps it itself. You only need one person to do it. So it's supposed to be efficient. It turns out Pete didn't stop to think that these trucks that they bought, that the city bought, couldn't fit in the alleys. So people had to put their trash in the front. Snows lots, icy there. People have to drag the trash, this big trash can receptacle down the stairs because it's not, or down the hill or stairs, whatever. Right. And that's dangerous. They put it out in front, and then the truck comes by, picks up the trash, and leaves it half the time, leaves the receptacle in the middle of the road. So your traffic's all screwed up. And so you threw two out of three people out of work, and you get lousy service. And that's Pete's record, not to mention all the potholes and all the stuff. You know, so.
Right. So there it is. I mean, now he is in charge of the agency, the federal agency. And so this is, you know, it's obviously a political and a sexual orientation appointment.
I mean, was the White House communications director apparently came out. What's her name? Pierre. What's her name? Some French thing. Well, she proud that the communications director is also homosexual. That's very important. It's another first. A lot of firsts in the Biden administration, I'll say.
There are. But anyway, so then when you have something like this happen, it is it's just a reflection of the government. I mean, it's from the lack of safety protocols to the affirmative action hiring in all of the aspects of the company, and then into the government, where the agencies are absolutely incompetent. It was depressing and kind of sad to see DeWine be so stupid. You know, I mean, he's a Republican. I don't know how you characterize him. He's not quite a rhino, but he's certainly not someone who's righteous. He's just he's just someone who always is loitering around. But it was just pathetic to watch his press conferences. You know,
yeah. Apparently, the Biden administration has rejected his request for federal relief from FEMA.
Yeah, and he was just absolutely milk toast about the whole thing and confused. He actually just seemed kind of deer in the headlight, frightened. I mean, not someone who could lead in a crisis. Mm-hmm. So this is the nation. The political class is, to say it's corrupt is that's kind of weak. I mean, it's just catastrophically corrupt at this point. You know, affirmative action has, put in a lot of people in positions that they don't even belong. And then now you have the sexual appointees who are, I would guess, are even worse than, I mean, in the old days with affirmative action, you know, I don't really know this is true or not, but I would say at least they would put in like a Black who would know something about trains, right?
You'd think,
right?
You were told they were out there, right? Hire them.
I mean, if you saw Pete's, his press conference is, Tim, he does not know anything about trains. I don't think he's ever even ridden on one. He knows what they are, but he does have not a clue about them. So this is, what they should do is sexual appointees like that, they should just regulate, put all of the kind of functioning of the office in the hands of someone who is competent.
Well, they don't understand function. They don't understand design.
They don't. They want to have power, because they're constantly trying to use the government to groom, find new sex partners.
Yeah. And then what does Richard Levine, a.k.a. Rachel Levine, know about mental health?
I mean, Rachel knows as much about mental health as Pete does about trains. Uh-huh.
There's Pete. He's a white male. So he doesn't get anywhere unless he's homosexual.
Yeah.
Right. So, other than that, he's a white male. Right. And we know the white straight males they have no standing in this country, even though they kind of built the country and maintained it.
And still are the backbone of the functioning parts of the economy.
Yeah. So if you exclude it, you make war on that, your human capital, the country is simply, it's not going to be able to be maintained. And it's not. That's what we're seeing.
Right. It isn't going to be maintained. And so that's why that black cloud, man, that was very metaphorical. Americans really need to look up.
I mean, that much was admitted, what was it, a year, 2 years ago, when the so-called African American Museum in Washington, D.C. had a plaque or a display that showed the attributes of white supremacy, white privilege, and one of it was like, what was it like? punctuality, perfection, you know, being a perfectionist,
yeah,
and precision. So it's like, right. Well, I mean, you can't run a complex society industry.
Those would have been three attributes that would have been really handy to have around that train.
If you're going to have a railroad, you better have precision and punctuality, timetables.
What we saw was an example of what happens when you don't have those three attributes.
Well, you see what happens to railroads. Like, what happened to, did you ever see the railroad in South Africa now?
Yeah.
It's not there anymore. It's like overgrown, and they stole all the rail lines, the ties, and the metal's been stolen, and these things just gone, just stolen, yeah. Strip mines. And like the elevators don't work in these things. The water service doesn't work. And we see it in Jackson, Mississippi, or Detroit, or Baltimore, and just a complete breakdown. And here's the thing: is a lot of this diversity stuff is if you were able to, if you can have quotas. These things, racial quotas and hiring and these things, these goals and these things. You also maintain standards, you wouldn't get the dysfunction. The only problem is, given the quality of, let's say, the diverse labor pool as it is now, you couldn't meet those quotas by maintaining standards. So what you do is you just get rid of the standards. And we see that this is why law schools aren't going to require SAT scores anymore. This is why merit scholarship awards are being ignored or being not handed out, because it offends those people who can't accomplish as much, who can't achieve as much for whatever reason. But instead of trying to uplift that or just acknowledging the reality of inequality, which is the nature of things, people are different for different reasons and they achieve things at different rates or different things. They do away with the standards. The problem, if you do that, you no longer have the human capital, the ability to maintain a modern society and an economy. But this is, they're willing to sacrifice us on the altar of ideology, you know. And then you have companies like BlackRock, these Jewish outfits like BlackRock, who was squeeze as much money out of a company while, you know, by not maintaining it, so they can maintain quarterly profits and give themselves bonuses by running the company into the ground, you know.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting that no one from the railroad company showed up at the press conferences or made any kind of public appearances to the distressed public. You know, they didn't. There's no reason for them even to interact with humans. They could care less.
I like the idea of the guys in the hazmat suits saying you're perfectly safe to the.
I know that was. That's so comforting to see that.
Well, the demographics of East Palestine are like 90% white. They voted heavily for Trump, and there are probably not too many homosexuals in that city. So it just doesn't appeal to people to judge.
Right. Well, you know, I'll tell you, the first thought I had was that it was theatrical, that this was actually just had been created, particularly when I found out about the setting the chemicals on fire. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, this looks very suspicious to me. And there had actually been a kind of movie foreshadowing of this event. This movie, White Noise, which is about a train wreck and a cloud, a black cloud that goes over a town.
Takes place in the 70s, though, doesn't it?
It's set in the...
Late 70s?
I would say in the 70s or the 80s. But it is a kind of Jewish.
But the title is interesting, White Noise.
The title is White Noise, right? With the idea of, you know, drowning out all sounds so that you don't hear anything.
Yeah, but at the same time, it seems they're making something about the it's like an ethnic statement.
Yeah, I mean, I actually watched part of the movie because I was interested in, mm-hmm. in whether or not it was foreshadowing, because you know you see a lot of foreshadowing and. Absurdist Jewish media things like The Simpsons, right? Mm-hmm. There's tons of it in there. The 911 was foreshadowed. Yeah,
Trump's presidency.
Yeah, so they're aware of kind of the futures of future plans. And so anyway, when I saw it, the thing that really set me off is that they had used East Palestine as the location for the filming of the train wreck mm-hmm. in the film. This was not, this was not in real life. This is the film. And so that seemed very suspicious to me. And then when I saw the film, it even got worse, because the lead character is someone who teaches Hitler studies at a college. Hitler studies.
Hitler studies.
Yes, that's
his, not World War. I mean, not World War II, no, or European history.
Hitler studies, and then the family that the film focuses on has like children within this little claustrophobic clump of a house from like five or six different marriages. You know, there's like 10 children. They don't really know, you know, my first wife, that was my second wife.
Okay, so it's the authoritarian personality.
It is the authoritarian personality. And so, you know, and it's the guy is a Jewish, the guy who wrote and directed it, Noah Baumgarten or something. He's you know, obviously it's just an attack on Christian culture. I mean, 100%, you know, mm-hmm. So it seems suspicious, but there was nothing I could see directly linking into the this event, the current historical event, but it was very, very odd. And this movie was just absolutely garbage. I almost didn't want to bring it up. I think some people are now talking about it as a meme, and in any case, just let the movie disappear down the cesspool, because it's just a miserable thing. But I did think that the event, you know, could possibly be theatrical, because the burning of the chemicals just seemed so, you know, improbable and unlikely to me that they would make such a catastrophic blunder. And then they'd have this photographic element of the, you know, really cinematography, you know, the black cloud was so ominous. So I thought, gosh, this looks, you know, like this is an operation. But I'm not so sure now. I think it, after looking at it, it could just be raw stupidity plus the, you know, the kind of woke government incompetence that we're experiencing. I don't know. But in any case, it's it will have, I suspect, after talking to my biologist friend Schmidt, that it will produce a lot of illness downstream. And that is sad.
Well, I mean, I suppose the Biden administration could send emergency relief, but all the money was spent in Ukraine. So,
well, at least they should have evacuated, not let them come back, and then had some kind of actual analysis of the surfaces and the atmosphere and the water.
Well, isn't the federal government spending tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, flying illegal immigrants around the country and putting them up in hotels and like in New York City?
Well, billions. I mean, do you know how expensive that project is?
Yeah. So, I mean,
but no cleanup for the white people, because they just don't deserve it. You know,
I saw a couple interviewed as a normal white, presumably Christian male and a white Christian female. And they didn't. I mean, the female was a female, the male was male. So, sorry, just you don't have a have a representation in Washington, D.C.
You know, I'll tell you the truth.
Not weird enough.
I actually enjoyed seeing the interviews with the Europeans in East Palestine, even though they were under tragic conditions, because it was the first time I realized, gosh, it's been so long since I've seen any normal white people on TV.
Yeah. Well, it is flyover country. It's Rust Belt. A lot of the industry that a lot of those towns to develop were long since outsourced by outfits like BlackRock and Vanguard, and so it's only fitting that, you know, they sent a train through that destroys what's left of the town. I hope there's an ample supply of fentanyl, you know, because that's what
there's going to be.
Yeah,
they'll be bringing it into all of the distress areas. I don't know how these people are going to be able to recover. I think that community, it looks to me, just, you know, by the cars that people were driving, I think it's pretty hard scrabble. I would call it probably lower middle class, but they're wonderful people. I mean, the people would seem articulate, but, you know, these areas have been distressed. The economic forces are not moving money toward these individuals.
Yeah, right? Then they're like raising chickens and growing, getting their own eggs, and their chickens die because of the spill.
Yeah, exactly. But so that's my point, is that they're going to have a hard time recovering financially. And if their net worth is tied up in the homes and the homes are unlivable, then they really are going to have to struggle to like set up a shop someplace else. And obviously the property values, well, I mean, they'll be non-existent until, for a decade or something. So, you know, it's just another blow to white people, to use an expression, here in America. And, you know, the best thing that can happen is that it'll just help, you know, accelerate the idea that the government is against the people. I was happy to see that the independent media was where people were getting their information from. Very much that was what was going on. So this of course is they had a poll that came out showing that social media now is far and away the place where people get news that they trust, and that you know, like 40% of the people who get information from social media trust it, as opposed to the network news or cable news networks, where like it was 20%. So this is a great sign. These polls were really, I was really happy to see them, because first of all, the independent media, I would say, we would get, what would you guess, like 90% of people who have clever and energetic minds right now, the people who really are engaged intellectually in the world, are using the internet for their information. The individuals who are still using network news and cable news, these are the vaccinated, and they are not going anywhere. And they don't trust the news any longer, but they aren't people who are going to be useful in, you know, some kind of political rebellion of some sort against the tyranny. So anyway, this was, you know, this one other thing that this event sort of illuminated is how the independent media is actually leading us, you know, those in our country who have the energy and the brain power. It's leading us to, you know, to use solely independent information, you know, not to even get anywhere near the mainstream, to completely distrust it. And this is what we have to do. We have to, you know, the independent media has to be like Gemma O'Doherty's idea that, you know, let's just stop talking English and go back to Gaelic. I mean, I'm not sure we could do that in this country, but we can at least absolutely shut off, you know, the mainstream media, and you know, we just it's absolute cesspool. Doesn't give us any good information. It's designed to hurt our emotions, and we need to put our time and our energy into developing the independent media that we can control.
The we mentioned this last week. It was a story of the FBI. Had produced an 8-page memo at the Richmond office telling his agents to increasingly observe interest of racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists in radical traditional Catholic ideology. It asserts that increasingly observed interest of racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, RMVE, in radical traditionalist Catholic RTC ideology almost certainly presents new opportunities for threat mitigation via tripwire and source development. So seeing there's they're going to try to infiltrate these groups, maybe stir things up a little bit. Of course, they withdrew the memo because of the uproar about it when it came out. You have Merrick Garland's Justice Department targeting what they call traditional Catholics, but there isn't really an official traditional Catholic. Really, so that's interesting. So these are people that might prefer the Latin Mass or Tridentine Mass over the Novus Ordo Mass. These things, their Virginia Attorney General and 19 other states are demanding the FBI come clean about the anti-Catholic memo. Virginia's Attorney General has led 19 states in sending a letter demanding that the FBI come clean about the origins and implementation of his recently leaked anti-Catholic memo, including about whether the FBI had begun spying on Catholics. In a Friday letter to FBI Director Christopher Wray and U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland, Virginia Attorney General Jason Mayeris slammed a memo targeting a so-called radical traditionalist Catholics as anti-Catholic and un-American, and demand the FBI probably, the FBI produced publicly all materials related to the document. There really should be congressional hearings on this. And Merrick Garland and Christopher Wray should be called up to Congress for this. In my opinion, forced to resign and also brought up on charges. That and many other things. But basically, the document claims that the RMVEs, what does that stand for again? RMV, it's an awkward. Radical
Catholic.
Radical motivated, what is it? There? Well, anyway, RMVEs, it sounds like a military vehicle. In radical traditionalist Catholics, it must almost certainly, the document claims that the RMVEs have sought out traditional Catholic worship and use the language of RTC ideology on social media. Besides attending traditional Latin mass, RTCs are considered to typically reject Vatican II and a valid counsel according to the memo. They're claiming that this is a radicals of anti-Semitic behavior, racist, blah, blah, blah. Of course, that's BS. That doesn't really characterize the Latin mass crowd anyway, but it looks like they're trying to divide and conquer the Catholics. But E. Michael Jones had an interesting spin on this. He pointed out that really had the common denominator is not the Latin mass among the groups that are targeted. The SPL, apparently this was instigated by the Southern Poverty Law Center, but I thought the FBI had broken off ties to, but probably the real culprit is the Anti-Defamation League, which really controls the FBI and has controlled it since the days of J. Edgar Hoover when they blackmailed them. And basically what this does is it's Merrick Garland's vendetta against Catholics, and particularly the abortion issue. And we saw that with the trial of Mark Hawk, who was acquitted last week. But Merrick Garland sent 20 FBI agents to arrest him with guns pointed at him for an altercation he had a year or two ago with a Jewish fella outside an abortion clinic in Philadelphia. It's an attempt to intimidate the pro-life movement and, of course, to prevent anti-abortion or pro-life activity in the wake of the reversal of Roe v. Wade. And so, but again, it's got nothing to do with the Latin mass thing, really. It's more just intimidating. We have to look at this in the context of what the FBI and the Justice Department has been doing for the past year and a half, is going after, you know, using this, the FACE Act, to intimidate pro-life activity and to prevent, pro-life advocates of the pro-life position from I guess affecting change in state legislation of restricting abortion further. But you really, we should be outraged. In fact, again, you have the spectacle of a Jewish attorney general having his FBI target Catholics, infiltrate Catholics, and politicize the FBI to go after pro-life movements who do have a First Amendment right to protest and also seek redress and organize and lobby and affect legislation.
So, Tim, just imagine if a Catholic like Bobby Kennedy had, if he was still alive, had went after B'nai B'rith or some Jewish fundamental organization with the idea that we need to investigate the idea that these people may have been somehow involved with 911. And so there's a lot of financial connections. This Israeli performing arts people who are inside the buildings that were mm-hmm. photographed, looked like, fuses for controlled demolition. I mean, we've really got to get to the bottom of this. Can you imagine what would the country would be like in terms of like the media rebellion that would take place the next day? I mean, they would, it would just be on the news with, pictures of Auschwitz and around the clock.
Well, the FBI, if they and the Justice Department, if they announced that they had suspected certain Jewish organizations of serving the interest of a foreign government, that would be far more legitimate than harassing a bunch of traditional Catholics.
That's my point. Is that it'd just be? I mean, it would actually have some traction.
Yes.
Going after. I mean, look. I mean, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. I mean, there's not many people that actually can say the Latin mass. I can, and I'm telling you, I kind of know people who can say the Latin mass. I just would say as a group, this would be like the last group to do any kind of skullduggery or
anything. ethnic or racial. If anything, they're not racial enough. But the Catholics don't even think in those terms for the most, particularly the Latin mass crowd. I know that. A younger group. Now there is some talk. I know I've talked to like younger people who are involved in Latin mass. They find it attractive and compelling because the solemnity of it all, the seriousness of it all. And there is some awareness of the JQ, the Jewish question, among that crowd, but it's not your, you know, there's not a terrorist threat. They're just simply asking the questions and talking about the issues, but it's not, that doesn't really reflect upon the Latin. Again, this is an attempt to sort of get in, exploit the divisions within the Catholic Church and cover up the real motivation, which is the ADL controls the FBI. Okay. The ADL. Exactly. And so basically, an ADL is a criminal organization. It was that ADL was created to cover up for Jewish criminality, to launder that, and also, and then at the same time, to get control through blackmail of these institutions, like they did with the FBI. So the FBI, although it's full of Catholics, it's controlled by the ADL, and that's obvious because you can't even get a badge of FBI agent without going to the Holocaust Museum. You know.
Yeah. Now, and it shows how self-centered these people are. That. You know, they engage in so much political manipulation and political pressure, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is based or is connected into the religion. And yet none of that they would ever think of as being even the slightest bit immoral, let alone illegal. I mean, to them, this is just sort of the way the world is supposed to be.
Well, look at APEC's influence on Congress.
Yeah,
the American Israeli Political Action Committee. They're a bundler, but they control. They make sure everyone, you know, toes the line in Congress. It was Nancy Pelosi who said that even if this building were to burn to the ground, we'd still vote for aid to Israel. Nothing for East Palestine. Aid to Israel, you know, right? That's all that matters. And, you know, everyone, when they get elected to Congress, they get that memo, used to be faxed to them. You have to swear allegiance to Israel if you're in Capitol Hill. If you don't, you're not going to be there too long.
Right. So they have just about a complete, you know, headlock on the federal government. And we saw that what, you know, efficiencies come out of this, you know, with the train wreck. So because they have this control over legacy media, you know, you have this worldwide conditioning going on against kind of any sort of self-esteem on the part of Europeans. I mean, you gave a good description, I think it was before we started recording, of, you know, Ireland presently, where you have, you know, the older generation protesting against the destruction of the Irish people and culture. And they, at these demonstrations, seem well-dressed and, you know, dignified, but the younger people look like fentanyl brigade inhabitants of the autonomous zone, right? And that's the effect of the culture control that their media has brought about. So, you know, the problems are everywhere, and we don't. I think that, you know, the as I say over and over again, they are at diminishing returns, particularly in terms of the people who are still, you know, clear-minded. The propaganda at this point is just, you know, it's not going to work anymore. The only question is how can the clear-minded organize politically? You know, I mean, you have, I think Gemma O'Doherty's approach is really should be studied by everyone in the United States that wants to see a better political reality. I think that, you know, these kinds of newspapers should just spring up everywhere, because I think, you know, it'll be tough sledding in a lot of places. You know, there won't be immediate overwhelming support, but there are enough people now, particularly after the COVID debacle and the lockdowns and now the vaccine. I mean, the Florida VAERS data that is now finally one state is actually, you know, releasing the truth about the thing. There is going to be a lot of anger that can be harvested. But if we just let the the mainstream media kind of process this and then you know, start to spin it in their direction, we won't have the right effects. We have the independent media, which is terrific, but I love the idea of having print media just start springing up. So if someone has a lot of money, I know some people who have wealth. I've been trying to get them to be involved in something like this, where, you know, you'd try to, you know, maybe get a hold of Gemma and have her help us set up like 50 of these kinds of newspapers in every major city. And then just, you know, find people righteous who can actually put out the, you know, the local news in a true sense. And of course, we can exchange information on the federal news and world news, and then start to just one block at a time, you know, sort of try to organize the clear-minded to survive what is coming. Because, you know, what went on to the poor people in East Palestine, I mean, Tim, you know, the government's breaking down. You know, it's the protection of government is that we've used to is going to be leaving. And so we're going to have to organize ourselves more and more to both protection and to have any kind of quality of life.
Yeah, even assuming they want to help in some of these situations, right, they're simply too diverse to be able to do that. They don't have the competency anymore.
You don't want Pete Buttigieg and Rachel Levine to show up at a train wreck.
No.
That's not going to help. That's not useful.
Yeah, sending in another train wreck to help to deal with the train wreck isn't going to help. We talked last week about the Cy Hirsch piece regarding the Nord Stream bombing, that apparently in his report was that it was carried out by the U.S. United States CIA in conjunction with Norway. Apparently someone leaked this to him, and this sort of backed up or confirmed what most people had kind of figured out just by the optics of it all. The fact that Joe Biden had said we'd end it, Victoria Nuland, our assistant secretary of state, said it would end, and it ended, and she was gloating about it. You had our secretary of state saying this: the destruction of the pipeline provides enormous opportunities. They were really gratified by it. Yeah. So we can't be too shocked that people suspect that the U.S. was behind it, or at least involved in it. Of course, it did help, or at least serve the U.S. strategic interest, because U.S. had always opposed the pipeline. Apparently, I understand Germany paid for most of it and designed it, and they got the gas from Russia. And it was that type of condominium or economic relation that the United States was against. Even the Trump administration was against it, because it connected Germany and Russia too closely. It promoted peaceful relations. Of course, that would kind of leave NATO, and this is a NATO ally, of course, Germany. Of course, the fact that the United States would bomb a NATO ally is put some strain on the NATO alliance, I'd say. And it's, of course, this is an act of war. But there it is. It's kind of laying out there. But I think a couple of weeks ago, we talked about that RAND study. Basically, the RAND Corporation had reported saying that U.S. should stop, you know, work towards ending and winding down the war, because the cost of the long war in Ukraine are significant and outweigh any benefits for the United States. We said this might be a shot across the bow of the neocons by the establishment, the Pentagon, who aren't entirely insane. I said this is sort of the military-industrial complex sending a message to the neocons, or the crazy Jews that control the State Department and control CIA and these things, and the Treasury Department. And so that was interesting enough that you might see sort of a crack in the or fissures in the ruling elite, division ruling, how to deal with this, saying their interests are being particularly affected. Particularly, the longer the war goes, the more sanctions there are, more strain puts on the petrodollar, which ultimately enables the huge military budgets the military-industrial complex depends on. There was, again, why when Seymour Hersh publishes this piece, what's really behind, what's the meta politics behind it? There's some people who've said that what's going on here is it was leaked because there was because there's a quid pro quo between U.S. forces and NATO to keep UK and Poland out of the story, to and to scapegoat Biden, to begin cleaning up the State Department and get rid of the neocons like Nuland and the British intelligence influences, to begin winding down the war, which I would be the most, which to me is the most optimistic way to look at it, and one I would like to see was happening, because, you know, there's some adults in the room. Another one theory is that to further put the U.S. and Russia on a collision course by having a journalist like Cy Hirsch confirm what everyone already wants to, you know, what everyone already knows or believes, is the U.S. is a rogue state. This further undermines U.S. credibility and hastens the you know, the collapse of the regime of the United States, and that's something that Soros might want. George Soros. This is something we've talked about. How the whole conflict might be get us to that great reset, currency debacle, energy shortages, which leads to a decline of the dollar, the institution of special drawing rights on our way to a CB central bank digital currencies. Another people have theorized that Putin, with even fewer domestic political options at home, other than a further escalation of pushing the world towards a closer to war, basically to get us to again to that great reset. So there's a different. This could be the meta politics behind it. Another way to look at it is that right after the, you know, obviously the bombing of the pipeline was an escalation. Perhaps someone leaked to Cy Hirsch, provided with the details of this top secret information about the Biden administration and its active war, its sabotage of the pipeline. The source wanted maybe to subvert the war effort and inflict serious damage on the United States. Or the source is an American hating communist. Or the source is someone just wants to see that he's important, sort of like he gets the high out of seeing him leaking the story and seeing it in print. Or perhaps the source is concerned with is an American who's concerned and who's thought that revealing information about the destruction of the pipeline by the United States would prevent or avert an attempt by the neocons to escalate the war and to avoid a catastrophic nuclear war with Russia. Again, the last option is probably the most optimistic, and that's the one I like to see. But right. This is an attempt to totally discredit the war effort. Now it'll be that much harder for the neocons to escalate the war, given the fact that the U.S. involvement in the Nord Stream bombing has been exposed, and now you won't see that escalation, because there is also an attempt to try to get Romania and Poland involved in this sort of anti-Russian coalition. They're mobilizing more troops in Poland, increasing the military budget, and calling up reserves, like if you're between 18 and 55 or something. And Poland's kind of being used because of ancestral resentment towards Russia. Poland can be used to foment a wider conflict. But this, again, the idea of leaking this story now, making it sort of official because you have someone of Cy Hirsch's reputation leaking it or reporting it, rather. And it is notable that it was published on Substack and not the New York Times. It shows you how controlled our press is now. What do you think?
The ascendancy of the independent media.
Yeah.
You know, that we're the side that brought it out. I you know, as I mentioned last week, there has to be a way that the secret society, the Judeo-Masonic ruling class, interacts with people in the military hierarchy, mm-hmm. Who are not in on the deal. And those who are not in on the deal at this point can look up, and I think they can see pretty clearly what these people are all about. So when you see things like the Rand report and Hirsch's leak, you have to wonder if in back of that there might not be some group that just wants to stop this process that's going on in Ukraine, because they can see that it, you know, that it could well lead to nuclear war. And of course, they don't trust any longer, you know, the administrative of the army. There's no patriotic linkage between, you know, down inside the bureaucracy and the top. You know, they're now, I'm sure there has to be a lot of mistrust. But anyway, the timing could be because the munition ratio are now starting to get catastrophically against the Ukraines and NATO. There's a guy who has a site called The New Atlas, Brian Berletic, and man, is he on top of the Ukrainian war. He was making predictions 6 months ago that have really come to pass. And I was, you know, at the time I thought, oh, this couldn't possibly be the case. But really what he's done is he understands the sort of the production process of the weapons and the shells that are used during, you know, warfare. And he pointed out that NATO was going to hit this point where they just couldn't produce any more rounds, artillery rounds, in a way fast enough to be meaningful on the battlefield. And he also pointed out, it was months ago when they first started talking about, you know, bringing in the big tanks from the West. He was going, no, these things take years to learn how to work. They aren't designed to work in a non-air support. You know, he actually knew the details, and he predicted where we are now very accurately. Mm-hmm. So anyway, what one thing that just fascinated me is he pointed out that we were going to run out of artillery rounds. In other words, that NATO is going to be going through a lot more than can be manufactured, and that we couldn't ramp up very quickly. And I won't bore everyone with like a lot of the details of how artillery rounds are made, but you know, you can't just go into production. It's very precise technology. You know, they've been doing it for 100 years. It can be done, but there really aren't much in the way of manufacturing capacity in the U.S. because
it's on China.
No, this is the funny thing. It's India. India makes the artillery rounds. And here's the bad news, Tim. We aren't the preferred customer. They like to do business with Russia. So if we want artillery rounds, we're just going to have to go to India and just try to cut a better deal because they make the, you know, the almost virtually all of the artillery rounds, and they're at, you know, basically at full capacity. They really can't gear up very quickly. Whereas Russia, on the other hand, does make a lot of its own rounds. And so the equation of just raw firepower now is going to dramatically shift in the favor of Russia. And the Russians, of course, can, you know, calculate where all of this is, this process is. They understand it very well. And so this would be a great time to try to sue for peace, because you can, if this is correct, you're going to end up with in a month or two at the most, you know, just an overwhelming disadvantage for the Ukrainian forces in terms of firepower, mm-hmm. you know, let alone the fact that their, you know, army is being, you know, eviscerated. So this would be logical. Of course, that's why it won't occur. They're going to fight, I would say, right down, you know, because the problem is that someone like Brian Berletic, and, you know, the guys who do analysis of it, they don't ever consider that the extinction of the Ukrainian people might be a goal of NATO. You see what I mean? If you don't have that as sort of a question, then it's hard to make sense out of all this or why they, for example, like everyone is wondering, why don't the NATO pull the Ukrainians out of Bakhmut, where they're having this kind of siege going on and the Russians are losing, I mean, are winning, obviously, and the Ukrainians are losing so many men. Well, if the goal is to create a brave new world Khazaria empire, and they want all the Europeans out, then it's going perfect. You see what I mean? So if they don't have that as at least some kind of analytic platform, I just think it's hard for these people to really make sense out of the war.
Yeah, it's not, it may not be a march of folly. I mean, at one level it is, but I'm saying it's ultimately it's, yeah, the goal is to ethnically cleanse the area.
And yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. And that's why I think the war is just, you know, I mean, it could have been over in a week.
Certainly could have been avoided. Totally avoided.
It could have been avoided without any trouble. So the fact that here we are a year into it and, you know, we're just looking at, the Ukraine has basically been destroyed, the nation. Half of it is gone. I mean, half of the population is gone. They're going to lose at least a third of their geography and probably access to the Black Sea. Mm-hmm. It's under the best case. And if the war goes on another year, what will even be left? There won't be any. I mean, the nation will have literally been sacrificed by the neocons just to have this war for Russia, which they claim that the rationale that they would give is that we're slowly bleeding Russia. So that the way that they bleed Russia is to sacrifice an entire European nation. I mean, this is sick, sick stuff.
Well, these nations, they don't operate as nations because they're not independent. A good example, Germany is not a sovereign country. It's occupied. It's controlled. Right. The fact that German Chancellor Scholz was apparently forced into accepting the destruction of his own country's pipeline. It was a key to his country's industry, means that, you know, no national leader, no independent national would accept such terms. So he was dictated to. The bottom line or the deeper, you know, the bottom line is, with Nord Stream destruction, it reveals that Germany is not a sovereign power, nor is all of Europe, really. It's under American control. France, England, Austria, Germany, all those countries, these are petty powers that have no real existence independent. So the whole Westphalian nation state thing is a lie. And this is the liberal, you know, this is the rules-based system of the liberal order. It's just that you follow our rules or else.
Exactly. Well, look, you know, the Nord Stream thing was just an example of what occurred to gain control over the Ukraine back at the Maidan Rebellion. I mean, remember, Yanukovych was making a pipeline deal with Putin, which would have been as beneficial to the Ukraine as Nord Stream would have been to Germany.
He turned down an offer from the EU and took Russia's deal.
And the Russian offer had really good financing terms. It was going to really set the Ukraine up into a good position. And what do they do?
They set it ablaze.
They set it ablaze.
Yeah.
EU. This is really just the Nord Stream. It was just the second time that this technique has been done for the very same reason. And so, you know, then they put in, their puppets, and now the Ukraine, when you lose political control to the Judeo-Masonic Zio Empire class, boy, you had better watch your everything about your country.
Well, here's the argument I heard people saying, well, the problem with the pipeline was it made Germany dependent on Russia. For energy. So Germany can't trade with Russia, can't decide who she wants to trade with. No, because if they trade with Russia for energy, then Putin will be able to blackmail them and cut the energy off. So the solution is to blow the pipeline up so they don't get energy.
Become a slave state to NATO. That's somehow better than being blackmailed
and pay 4 to 5 times the energy cost for liquefied natural gas. So your industry is transferred to the United States. Like, I think it was the BASF went to the United States because of the energy costs.
Yeah. This is just the workers' paradise, logical fallacy once again being given to Europeans it's going to be better. We're working for you. We have these great ideas. We have to protect you from Russia. But at the end of the day, then, you know, hundreds of millions of Europeans are dead and they just did the best they could, but things just went terribly wrong.
Well, I don't know. Maybe the U.S. will benefit because you'll get all these refugees from Europe coming to the United States.
Or to Ireland.
Or to Ireland.
Yeah. I mean, that's where they're going. So, what is it now? I don't even, some of the numbers, I know they don't know how many Ukrainians are displaced, but the low numbers would be like a 10 million mm-hmm. number, right? I mean, it's just, can you imagine the life circumstance of that group? And there's no media coverage of this whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And yet that entire cohort of Europeans has to be just suffering massively right now, because they're never going to be able to go back.
Well, they weren't rich a nation going into it.
Right. So,
I mean.
So now they're in camps and all sorts of, who knows where they are. I mean, I don't even know what's become of them. Where are they? You know, they can't all be in Dublin.
And all this, I mean, know now the diplomatic history is that could have been avoided. A peace deal was avoided by Boris Johnson, U.S. interceded, prevented any deal from going through, and they've just prolonged the war.
We have to weaken Russia, and so they'll have regime change of Putin. And to help bring this about, we'll put sanctions in place to wreck the Russian economy at the same time we're bleeding them in the battlefield. I mean, that is the most ludicrous fantasy workers' paradise. I mean, and of course, now a year out, everything is collapsed. I mean, the sanctions, who's talking about the effects of sanctions on Russia? The only people who are suffering from the sanctions are the Europeans.
Yeah.
I think fairly shortly, the whole idea that Ukraine has any hope whatsoever in the battlefield will go away. I'm just afraid that at this turning point, instead of doing the right thing and just bringing the war to an end, they have a plan to regenerate the war using, you know, Polish and German.
Yes, yeah. And maybe that's what this leak to Cyrus was intended to avert, to keep prevent them from building up. The excuse of the political capital to do that. There's too much. People are saying for what it is now. And it's hard for the Biden administration, NATO, to get people kind of, rallying behind NATO, Ukrainian democracy, whatever they call it, I just find it interesting that through the process of globalism, they've outsourced the arsenal of democracy, so they don't have the firepower. And it's funny because the Ukrainian war has settled into sort of a relatively low-tech sort of a World War One battlefield where high-tech weaponry with sort of like the edge the United States had, it can't be applied because the high-tech machinery like airplanes can basically be shot out of the sky with relatively cheap drones and missiles, right?
So, the fraud of our world, Tim, is so immense. One of the frauds was this idea of like a massive and all-powerful military. I mean, they can't even get five tanks that run to like give them to the Ukraine. We were out of ammo. Russia, which is this, impoverished and technically, supposedly backwards country, is just grinding us to a pulp. We are at a moment, and they're either going to have to end the war or bring in fresh Europeans to slaughter. And I'm hoping, Tim, that,
NATO alliance can withstand that. I mean, it's already bombed a NATO ally, Germany. Well, I mean, that's the core of NATO.
Yeah, I have a friend who's Russian, and he said, he said, the really dangerous thing here is that if the European nations realize that NATO cannot fulfill its fundamental promise, which was it had this overwhelming power and it could defend them against Russia, if they actually see that, Russia can just come in here with its tanks and slaughter us as well, that NATO will break up, and that will be a very dangerous geopolitical moment.
NATO has been instead of providing stability and security for the continent, it's been a source of instability and chaos, right? Because it was NATO that oversaw the overthrow of Gaddafi, and also it's also Western United States and CIA that's involved in I think we're in the 12th year of the Syrian civil war, trying to overthrow the Assad regime. And this has been the source of these waves of refugees from North Africa and the Middle East into Europe, destabilizing Europe. And that's NATO causing that. So your NATO alliance isn't securing anything for you. It's carrying out it's implementing the Kaliergi plan.
Exactly. You know? That's what NATO is doing.
Yeah.
And it can't possibly make the claim that you need us to, because we're the only thing that can protect you against Russia. Russia just demolished NATO in the actual tank battle that NATO has been claiming it's defending Russia, Europe against, since the end of World War II. So, mm-hmm. This is an interesting time. I'm hoping it tips the right way. I'd love to see this war end.
So, okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, we'll get them next week, buddy.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.